Dr. Cooper, thanks for coming in. It's nice to meet you finally in person.
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be here.
Yeah, and you're coming on a very exciting day for Asheville. Donald Trump is coming. He's scheduled for a rally at 6 o'clock at the U.S. Cellular Center. Now, you've been walking around town a little bit, so you've seen kind of what the level activity is. What have you seen so far?
You know, there's certainly a lot of activity over at the Cellular Center. Tends to be a lot more so on the Trump side, it looks like. I think I counted 6 protesters on the other side of the road. I'm sure that's going to ramp up as time goes on, but at this point, it was definitely heavy on the Trump side.
Yeah, you know, when we talked Friday about the Trump rally, the one thing we didn't get into is, what do you think it says that, you know, Donald Trump and Mike Pence are making so many visits to North Carolina? Is that a bad sign? Because this is a, you know, a state that Republicans really need to carry. Is it a bad sign that they're having to make, you know, all these defensive stops, really? They're sort of playing defense.
You know, I don't think it is. I think it's actually a really smart move on Trump and Pence's part. And I think up to this point, Trump has run a very unconventional campaign, shall we say. He's been expending resources in states we don't expect him to. And so spending time and spending money, frankly, in Virginia, in North Carolina, in Michigan, in New Mexico to some degree, and even in Missouri, in Ohio, of course, Pennsylvania, seems like the smart move for Trump and for Pence. And so I don't see it so much as defensive, but as kind of a calculated move where they're spending their resources where they will best be used.
Okay. You know, this was a really interesting weekend with presidential politics. Obviously, Hillary Clinton, you might say, had a rough weekend.
Sure.
She had to start out sort of defending her comments about the Trump supporters, the deplorables comment. And then, of course, she got sick yesterday and got diagnosed with pneumonia, which apparently had happened already on Friday. But she did go to this memorial for 9/11. You know, it's really impossible to know exactly how this is going to shake out. But how do you think this might play out?
You know, I think it plays into a lot of the narratives about Clinton that aren't real positive, right? There's a perception, whether it's fair or unfair, that she's not real honest with the media, that she's not real forthright, and that the Clintons in general kind of keep information of themselves. And so I think it plays right into this natural narrative that Donald Trump is wanting to convey. Now, of course, ironically, Donald Trump is 2 years older than Hillary Clinton, so I don't see this as being about health so much as about how forthright and honest the candidates are.
You know, the argument's been made in the past week, especially since the Matt Lauer forum, that Trump is being held to a different standard. What do you think about that whole argument? I mean, is Trump getting a pass that Hillary Clinton is not getting?
You know, I don't think so. I think there's a lot of things we can say about Donald Trump and the media coverage, but I think it's been pretty hard on him. I mean, the Washington Post, for example, has, I think, taken a lot of shots at Donald Trump, and whether they're appropriate or inappropriate is for other folks to figure out. But no, I don't think the media has been harsher on Clinton than they have on Trump. If anything, I think it might be the opposite.
Yeah, you know, the Washington Post, I remember, took out a full-page editorial that they've never done before, basically saying Trump is a danger to the country.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they've hit him harder than I recall them hitting any other candidate, frankly.
Well, let's talk about some of the interesting races that are happening more locally. A lot of people are running unopposed, and so people running for state house and senate, there aren't a ton of competitive races, but there are some here in Western North Carolina. What are some of those?
I mean, I think statewide, sort of just start a little bit bigger, I think you're exactly right. So about 50% of the state house seats, I think it's like 46%, are unopposed this go round, which I think is really interesting. The state senate's a little bit less, but I think both parties have kind of let certain races go. And we see some of those around the region. The Brian Turner race is an obvious example of that, where I think we would have expected the Republicans to have, frankly, a pretty good candidate to go after Brian Turner. We haven't seen that.
Yeah.
I think some of the ones that are going to be a little bit closer, the North Carolina 50, Senate District 50, you've got Jane Hipps going against Jim Davis. Jim Davis, of course, is the incumbent. Jane Hipps ran against Jim Davis last time. She ran, she lost, she's running again. And so I think that is going to be one of the more interesting races. Davis has been in for a few terms and has been, you know, very, very influential. I think the Ager race is going to be interesting also. I think those are probably going to be the tightest races in the region.
Yeah, John Ager won his last race by only 493 votes, and he is getting a tough challenge from Dr. Frank Moretz, who hasn't been in office before, but isn't exactly really unknown. You know, he's a co-owner of Highland Brewing Company, a very popular beer, of course, here in Nashville, and and is running as a moderate too. So
yeah.
There is I've interviewed them both, and there is actually quite a separation in some of their views, but they do seem to agree on a number of things too.
They do, and I think they're both professional candidates. They're both running professional campaigns. They're spending some real money. I mean, that's a tight race sort of statewide, and I think in general in the state, you know, the Democrats are extremely unlikely to be able to take over any majority. I think the sort of the goal line for the Democrats this go around is to break the veto-proof majority that the Republicans currently enjoy. And I think the Republicans obviously want to play defense and make sure that doesn't happen.
Do you think Norm Bossert, who is running for Apodaca's old mm-hmm. seat against Chuck Edwards, who mm-hmm. was appointed, do you think Norm Bossert stands any chance in that race? I know Apodaca won his last election, I think, by 15 percentage mm-hmm. points or so. So it wasn't close.
Right.
But is that a district that favors Republicans? I mean,
it does. Yeah. I think it favors Republicans pretty heavy. Sort mm-hmm. of any sort of metric we use for obviously who won the last state legislative election, but even for how they voted in the last presidential election, it's definitely a Republican-leaning district. I think Tom Apodaca is a calculating and smart politician. I think he retired at a time and in a district where he thought his party could maintain control.
What about the race for Michelle Presnell's seat? Mm-hmm. Now, Michelle Presnell is running again. Mm-hmm. Rhonda Shandoval, I mm-hmm. think, is her opponent. That is expected to be a close one, too, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it could be. And I think mm-hmm. the last go-round, that's one of the Republicans that, you know, if you had said, hey, you know, Tim Moffitt's going to lose, we thought, well, also Presnell's going to lose. And we didn't see that at all. And so, yeah, I think that is a seat that could be a little tighter. So if you figure there's maybe 20 House seats, maybe 7 Senate seats in the state that are competitive, you know, we have at least one probably on the Senate side and probably 3 or 4 on the House side that probably fit that criteria.
Yeah. Well, looking statewide, there was an interesting poll that came out last week. I think this was a Quinnipiac mm-hmm. poll. And what was interesting to me is that they showed that Cooper was leading McCrory in the race for governor by 7 percentage points, but Deborah Ross was trailing Richard Burr by 7 percentage points.
Yeah.
How do you explain that disparity?
You know, it's really interesting, right? We expect to see kind of party coattails work from the bottom of the ballot to the top of the ballot, or really from the top to the bottom. And we're not seeing that this time. Obviously, the presidential race looks very different. That Senate race looks very different than the gubernatorial race. I think McCrory may not be quite as popular amongst Republicans as Burr is, maybe part of it. And I think for whatever reason, Ross maybe hasn't gotten her name out quite as much as Cooper has. Maybe it's because of HB2. Maybe it's just because of sort of where the campaign expenditures have gone. But I think Ross has had a hard time breaking through the noise.
Yeah, McCrory released an ad about House Bill 2. And some have pointed out that this isn't really a popular bill in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Is it a smart move for him to be sort of still playing defense on House Bill 2? Or is that the kind of thing that he should just be trying to hope people forget?
You know, I don't think anybody's going to forget House Bill 2. I think a few months ago that might have been possible, but I think given everything that's happened with the NBA and with sort of national boycotts, I think probably the best thing he can do is to own the bill at this point. Obviously North Carolinians are probably against it, but I think there's more Democrats that are for it than we commonly acknowledge. I think, mm-hmm. Maybe about a fifth of the Democrats actually support a House Bill 2. So it's not it's not like it's a 90-10 kind of bill. It's probably more like a 60-40 kind of bill.
And many speculated that House Bill 2 was originally passed to actually engage Republican voters. And
yeah.
Maybe that backfired. I don't know. Do you think House Bill 2 is dragging McCrory down?
To some degree, I think it is, right? Because most voters aren't going to sort of delineate, okay, who's responsible for each thing. It ends up being kind of a pox on both of their houses. So I think if there's kind of a mess going on statewide, the governor is the person who tends to get the blame for that, even if the true sort of causal responsibility is a little bit murkier than that.
Yeah. Well, it's really early, but
yeah.
Do you have any predictions for how you think the race might go?
For the governor's seat?
Mm-hmm.
I think right now Cooper probably does enjoy a small lead. I think the poll you just named certainly leads us in that direction. But I think what I really trust even more are these kind of averages of polls that folks do, kind of the poll of polls, if you will.
Yeah.
And those tend to show Cooper with a slight advantage. But If I were a gambling man, and from time to time I am, I would not be betting much on this on this race. I think this is far from a Cooper Guarantee victory, or certainly a McCrory victory. I think it'll probably be the closest gubernatorial race in the country, and I think we'll have one of the closest presidential races in the country.
Do you think the Senate race will be close as well? Or do you think Burr could pull that one out?
It looks like, you know, if nothing changes, and it may, we have a lot of time to go. But yeah. I would say Burr, of the three races we just named, Burr has the largest lead, right? So if you think about the kind of the sort of the big ticket, high on the ticket races, the Burr-Ross one is the one that I would feel most confident in sort of predicting what's going to happen, and to say that Burr has a good chance, right? I mean, and this is what we see nationally. It's what we see historically. Burr is an incumbent. There's a huge incumbency advantage in the U.S. Senate. Incumbents win well over 80% of the time. So all else being equal, we would expect a Burr victory this time. And right now, that's where it looks like it's leaning.
What about that race for state Supreme Court? That's the one that I think nobody's really going to talk about. But it's a big race. Michael Morgan is a registered Democrat. He's running against Bob Edmonds, who's the registered Republican. But it's a nonpartisan race, so when people go to the polls, they won't see a D or an R.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if people are even going to know who they are.
Yeah, I think that's this is kind of a national conversation right now. Some states elect judges, some states don't elect judges, some are nonpartisan, some are partisan. And so we have this nonpartisan election. And the idea is people choose the real candidate they like and not the party. The problem is most of us rely on party pretty heavily when we make our vote choice. So I think you're right. I think we're going to see a lot of what we call ballot roll-off, which is people saying, hey, yeah, I'm going to vote for the president, I'm going to vote for the Senate, I'm going to vote for these other races, but I'm just going to skip that one, right? We call that ballot roll-off. And I would think we would see very high roll-off on that particular race, which ironically, it's the one that may make the most difference in the lives of North Carolinians. I mean, if you look at the kinds of policies that really make a difference in our daily lives, clearly this is an office that does make a big difference.
Yeah, the state Supreme Court right now has sort of a 4-3 split of conservatives versus liberals.
That's right.
And so this one could tip the balance if Michael Morgan were to prevail.
It could. And you know, right now it looks like that's probably less likely. I mean, he'd be the underdog, I think most folks would agree. But were that to happen, it would be, it'd be a real change in North Carolina.
Do races like that typically struggle to, you know, kind of latch onto the coattails? Like, say, Hillary Clinton had a great campaign and finished strong and won. Is it going to be harder for Michael Morgan to kind of ride those coattails because of the nonpartisan factor?
Yeah, absolutely. It's when that ballot roll-off is high, it's a lot more difficult. So a lot of folks still do straight ticket voting. And if you do that, you're not going to include these nonpartisan races. And so that's a real issue for these candidates, one, to differentiate themselves from their opponent, but also to sort of align themselves when it benefits them with the top of the ticket.
Okay, well, great. Well, Dr. Cooper, it's great to have you in. I really
Thanks so
appreciate
much.
You taking the time to talk to me.
Enjoyed talking to you.